think I'm the chairman this time, right? I think Mr. Jim there passed it off to me.
Did I?
Yeah.
He wasn't even here and he did it.
Yeah.
I knew I should have given you that number earlier.
So, anyway, yeah, I'll entertain a motion. Let's see, public comment. Anyone here wishing to, we got Jim Bouquet and we got Dave and we got Dennis.
Yep, got it.
So we got that done, public comment. I don't see anyone unless somebody wants to talk about something that's not on the agenda.
Only thing that I'll mention is that, JK2 is going through a general plan amendment and a rezone process in order to construct a new agency office that's a bit contentious with the Westgate Road Association members. And I hope through a series of public meetings that we're able to relieve some of their concerns, whether we'll be able to relieve all of their concerns.
But you'll get some.
There's just a general fear that it's a landfill expansion and not just an office. So I try to say that over and over and over again. But it's challenging.
The other issue that I have heard on the street, since we're on that issue, is, and I know that you've got some numbers on stick-built versus modular.
Mm-hmm, the cost.
And those numbers need to get out in the public because everybody's saying it's a $1 million project. Mm-hmm. So in some fashion, we need to get the correct numbers
out.
Whether it be a cheat sheet that some of the board members can carry around with us and say, here's the stick built, here's the modular, mm-hmm. Here's the roadway, and here's the true information.
Mm-hmm. And here's the 20% contingency.
Right.
Because that's what they're not looking at, too. Yeah, I'll provide that to the board.
Okay. So, with that, I will entertain a motion for the minutes of July 16th.
So moved.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Closed, there is nobody, so the chair votes aye, motion carried. I'll entertain a motion for the warrants for September on B1.
So moved.
I'll second it.
Moved and seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
Chair votes aye, motion carried. Non-grant funded warrants. What is that one, Christine?
Non-grant funded warrants are warrants that are not reimbursed by grants.
Okay.
That the agency has as expenses. And I'll explain a little bit of these because you see some negative expenses in regards to on dates August 11th, 2014. There's three negative expenses. And what happens is for the Tehama County Recycled Market Development Zone, we're allotted a certain amount of funds each year to spend to market the program and try to get businesses to site in Tehama County that make products out of recycled materials, whether it be making a skateboard out of recycled plastic or a composting facility or anaerobic digestion facility. All of those types of projects would comply with the program. Those funds that we get, we spend the money, and then after I spend the money, CalRecycle reimburses us.
Okay. So you spend negative and then gets reimbursed. Mm-hmm. I'll entertain a motion.
And so moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Chair votes aye, motion carried. 4-1, informational. Partial final closure, foot closure plan, cost estimate.
Okay, so I'll try to go through this really quickly. And I'm going to refer you to page 21. I didn't print out the whole
plan
fine. For you because it's 20, or I don't know, it's about 500 pages. But I printed the cost estimate for you.
We can show.
At the final numbers.
And this is money that we currently have in the bank.
Yes, it's all good there.
So.
We're in very good shape. So I'll first start with the process and remind you a bit of the process. So I did my final review of the plan, working with Lawrence and Associates, who is our consultant, to complete the partial final closure and post-closure plan. It's considered partial because it's only for phase one. It doesn't include phase two. We finalized all of the edits that needed to be made to it, and we submitted it on Monday to the regulatory authorities for their review. And so once that happens, it basically becomes a time period where we go back and forth making comments back and forth until the regulatory authorities are happy with the plan and they agree to the plan and the agency agrees to the changes that they want made to the plan. That process could take up to 2 years, and that's why they make us submit it 2 years before closure is expected, because that back and forth process can take some time between Tehama County Environmental Health, the California Regional Water Quality Control Board, and PowerCycle. We cannot begin our closure activities. We can't go out to bid. We can't do anything until the regulatory authorities
approve
the plan. So once that happens, we can issue an RFP for a closure activities. And required by law, we have to have a registered engineer monitor the whole entire closure process. So Lawrence and Associates will be on staff monitoring CQA and quality assurance to make sure the closure occurs the way it's planned out. And I will be on hand as well to make sure that they're following the closure plan as well. So that's the main issues. If we receive our last bit of waste in September 2016 like we expect, we will not begin the closure process till the following summer, so June 2017, because you can't put soil and compact soil in rain. It's the simplest way to put it. You have to have dry weather, good weather, to get the compaction ratios that you need. And then once the closure cap is on there, you want to limit access to the landfill as much as possible. And I'll give you an example, and we'll make sure to report to all of the local fire departments and any other authority that might have an interest of coming up onto the landfill. But we'll also be installing gates at locations where you can access the landfill, because what happened in Amador County is they got a 911 call, didn't know what it was for. So the police department went out to the landfill there and drove up their closed phase of the landfill, just doing their job, seeing what was going on, what was the nexus of the call. And it was muddy, and it had been raining, and they destroyed the closure cap.
Ooh.
Just not knowing. And it cost $4 million.
Yes, we need to let the sheriff know.
And the PD
and the fire department.
And so from that, I made sure. I have a couple of concerns. I have concerns about the Endicotts have dirt biking activities around there, and sometimes the kids like to cut the fences. And so based on that concern, and based on the concern for emergency purposes, I made sure that there's a gate next to any access point to the landfill to make it at least more difficult to enter, and we'll make sure to post a sign.
And when we close that, will that include a chain link fence around it, or what kind of fencing are we gonna?
It won't have a chain link fence around that. That's one option. I looked at the cost of that. They didn't think, because of the slopes of the landfill, they didn't think that there would be access, adequate access to go up the side slopes, and they didn't think that it would be an issue. If the board wanted to consider that, I've already looked at the numbers, it would add another $68,000 to the project.
Well, it ain't gonna be cheap, was the chain link, but... Well...
Well, I can see the fire department not stopping at the fence, that's not something we do. So they'd have to really be aware.
Educated.
Yeah, we've got to really do an educational process, because deputy's gonna drive through there, you know, I mean...
Oh, yeah, if there's a fire, you know. There wouldn't be a fire in the winter time, you wouldn't expect, but...
Domestic violence and the bad guy ran to the dump, and they're gonna take their car right up it. I mean, they had one with less than 100 miles on it, he drove through a creek, so, you know, and if he tries to drive through a creek, he's gonna drive through a fence. So the education...
So we're just worried about the first winter, is that all you're worried about? With the fire department going on?
Oh, no, the whole life. So for 30 years until the waste no longer poses a threat. It's at a higher risk of getting damaged the first year, because you don't have the vegetation layer in place. But even still after that, you get a big winter storm, and then you get somebody in their big truck driving through there, and it can be quite detrimental and costly.
$60,000 for a fence might, not to consider it tonight, it might be worthwhile in terms of insurance.
And it might be, you know, so I wouldn't take it totally out of the plan yet.
It's $4 million to fix something, yeah.
Yeah, that's a four-wheelers come out there or something like that.
And one thing to consider is that if we put it in the plan, it's required by the state. If we don't put it in the plan, and the board chooses to do it, it's something that it can be done at the board's option.
Oh, okay.
And so we have some excess funds.
Leave it that way.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
So closure activities generally include placement, grading, and compaction of a 2-foot foundation layer of soil, and then placement of a clay layer, and we have to achieve a certain compaction density, and we have to test the soil to make sure it's gonna achieve that compaction density before we even place it on top of the landfill. Luckily, we have very dense clay soil that we can excavate from the phase two landfill to use for the closure cap, which is very fortunate. In Monterey County, they had to close their landfill, and it's sand there. And so they had to import soil, and it ended up costing them about $13 million in just transporting soil. So you can see how fortunate we are. After we build the clay layer, then we have to place and grade a 1-foot topsoil layer, and then we have to vegetate as well. And so you can see that it's not a lot of hard work, it's a lot of work ensuring that you're gonna get the compaction that you need, and it's a lot of work moving soil, so it's a lot of heavy equipment.
So, and we will go out to a separate contractor?
We will go out to bid, yeah, Lawrence and Associates, and is already contracted to prepare all of the bid documents for that. And it's not clear, it's possible that Waste Connections could bid on the project for closure. I'm not sure if they would, because they don't pay their employees prevailing wages currently, and this is a prevailing wage project, so they would have their employees moving soil to put daily cover on the landfill, and they would be making significantly less doing that than they would be moving soil for this project. So, and they've been in a prevailing wage lawsuit before, so we'll just have to see. But they could potentially bid on it, and if they were interested, their cost to do it, because they're already on site and they already have the equipment on site, would be much less.
In terms of long-term maintenance on this thing, once you get the vegetation in and it takes root, is it have to be maintained in any manner, or is it just kind of whatever actually takes and grows naturally is what's going to be left there?
Yeah, so you do have to maintain it, and we have it within our budget to revegetate up to 1 acre per year, which is more than adequate for based on what's happened at other landfills. It's much less than 1 acre needing to be revegetated each year, but we have to have all of those costs included in our post-closure cost estimate. So if you look into the details of this, it's quite in depth, but it does cover all of those costs, and we can go through that in further detail if you want a PowerPoint presentation later on or something, but I didn't prepare that today.
That might be beneficial to the full board, and invite this board and do it too. Because that life expectancy of 30 years on the education side, we need to let all of the board members, both from the city of Tehama, city of Red Bluff, and the county and Corning, we need to tell them all.
Yeah, I'll prepare a PowerPoint presentation for the board. It probably won't be for the October full board meeting, but maybe for my last. Before I go and leave.
Or when you come back.
Or when you come back.
Whatever's convenient for you.
Just 2 weeks then.
Pardon?
Just 2 weeks.
Oh, yeah.
I think
if you
it's
want
up
me to
to
come
12
back
weeks,
with my hair frazzled and half asleep. So in the event that we can't begin our closure activities right away due to inclement weather, we do have to get approval to delay our closure activities from Tehama County Environmental Health. And that is not uncommon to have to do due to inclement weather, because you can't close in the winter months. And so Tehama County Environmental Health, and I already spoke about that, and they're prepared that if that happens, that we'll make accommodations for that.
Very good.
That being said, closure activities are required unless you get that exemption to take longer than 180 days due to something like inclement weather. You have to finish the entire closure process within 180 days, so you have a pretty short time frame to do so. The reason why I wanted to show you page 21 of the closure cost estimate is because of some revisions that were made that have reduced our costs pretty significantly, which is really good news.
If they're reduced, that's fine.
Yeah.
And I'll explain why. As part of the new landfill and MRF operations agreement, we really cemented in, it was Waste Connection's responsibility beforehand, but we cemented it in stone, what was their responsibility as far as the landfill gas extraction system and as far as groundwater monitoring. And previously, those costs for post-closure were all to be borne by the agency. And now, because of our new contract, that's actually Waste Connection's cost. And I want to remind you that the only reason we had a tipping fee increase was for actually new construction of phase two. So we're saving over $46,000 per year in closure costs. That's over 30 years, so it's $1.4 million.
Very good.
As a result of the negotiation. So it's a huge reduction in our post-closure costs for the agency, and it just goes to show the importance of good negotiations. So that's what you have before you. The funding that we need for all of our closure and post-closure responsibilities right now is $5.1 million, and our fund balance is almost 6.1, so we have a balance of $974,000 in excess of what we need.
Very good.
Are there any other questions about the closure process?
Okay.
So we're looking at receiving the last bit of waste, potentially September 2016, and closure process to start at the earliest June of 2017.
Okay, very good. So that completes 4-1. 4-2 is the Senate Bill 939.
So each year, this agency is required to submit our annual diversion report to the state to show that we're meeting the requirements of Assembly Bill 939, which requires cities and counties to divert at least 50% of its waste stream. That was the nexus of why this board was created, along with creating a closure management agency. And so this agency reports on behalf of all of the cities, so the city of Corning, the city of Tama, the city of Red Bluff, and the county. In 2009, Senate Bill 1016 passed with the promise by CalRecycle that they were going to shift from a disposal-based measurement system or a diversion-based measurement system that had tons of flaws with it to a diversion-based measurement system with an emphasis on program implementation. And it seemed like everything was going to be great and dandy, and they were just going to look at our programs, and we thought it was going to be a wonderful thing. Well, then they started wanting not numbers of our county as a whole, but they wanted us to report detailed numbers and tracking of our programs. And so it actually became more tracking and more data analysis than less. So it was a bit unfortunate. That being said, we're one of the more proactive counties in terms of our diversion program, so we don't have much to worry about because our diversion programs stand for themselves. But it is a lot more work for the agency to produce the annual report and to keep up with all the data tracking that staff have to do to be able to compile that report. So that being said, we calculate the diversion rate for population and for employment. So population is residential and employment is business waste. So we're achieving a 55.7% diversion rate for population, which is really good. But for employment, we're just over 50%. And so staff is really going to be putting an increased emphasis in its commercial recycling program, the Smart Business Alliance, to make sure that we're showing that we're doing our due diligence and educating the public and our business people about the requirement to recycle. So all businesses that produce more than 4 more cubic yards of waste per week or a multifamily establishment of 5 or more units must recycle. And they don't have to sign up with green waste or waste management. They could self-haul. They can take their own recyclables in to where they want to, but they do have to recycle by law. That being said, we don't have any enforcement authority. So we're required to educate the businesses about that. And so that's what we do, and we offer them assistance, and that's the whole purpose of the Smart Business Alliance program, is to provide the businesses the assistance they need to get over that hurdle of, okay, I don't recycle, I think it's gonna cost me more, too. I am recycling and I'm actually saving money, which in most cases businesses do save money by recycling.
Does this have the City of Corning's figures too?
It does.
It does, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we report for the City of Corning. We report as a county as a whole,
right.
But I can pull out the City of
Corning.
No,
I just wondered if they were in there, because I know they do a lot of that. After mm-hmm. they pick it up, they recycle.
Yeah.
So.
Okay.
And I can report on specific achievements. I can tell you just offhand that we recycled over 15,000 pounds of batteries in calendar year 2013, which is more than most larger cities.
Only small batteries or cars?
The alkaline batteries, just alkaline batteries. 15,000. Yeah, and my staff sort them, so they go through, and that's all through our curbside alkaline battery recycling program. Without that program, we would not be getting that many batteries. The only place people would be able to dispose of their batteries properly would be at the hazardous waste facility, and you just don't get that much participation.
Can I get a container at our fire department for batteries?
We can talk about that.
Okay. It's just I've had people ask me about it.
We can give it to them for residential, but we charge businesses, including governmental agencies, for their own battery disposal, any hazardous waste disposal. And it's been a continual challenge because businesses don't like to pay for their hazardous waste. But the cost for us to dispose of it, it costs us 63 cents a pound to recycle the batteries.
And then maybe I just get some signs that I can put up so all firemen know that they can go to Happy Hills and drop them off.
Mm-hmm. So I don't mind providing them, as long as they're just for residential.
Because you go to use what, the clamshells with the...
No, we don't go through a lot because most of our calls are rechargeable.
Right.
That's good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But we do go through some rechargeable from the department.
Yeah, I know the sheriff's department goes through quite a few batteries.
Yeah, it's just we have 35 volunteers, so they all go through flashlight batteries.
Mm-hmm. Okay, JPA 1-2 consolidation. We don't have any other action items, do we?
No, we don't.
Yeah.
So just as an update, one of the goals of this fiscal year is to research the possibility of consolidating JPA 1 and JPA 2. The primary purpose of that would be to create efficiencies in agency administration and reduce duplication of effort. I do a lot of duplicating of what I tell you to what I tell JPA 2.
Right.
A lot of planning of meetings, a lot of reporting of meetings. There's just a lot of duplication of effort. And then we have two audits created each year for the two agencies. If the agencies were combined or consolidated, we would only have to have one audit completed each year. So there would be savings there as well. There would be savings at the auditor's office. We've already created some efficiencies there by creating all, getting rid of all the back and forth payments between the agencies. But this would just even further the efficiencies. That being said, I created a new agency structure and bylaws, and I submitted it to Jim Curtis, who's JPA 2's legal counsel, and to Greg Einhorn, who's JPA 1's legal counsel, for their review. They both felt that the concept is great and it makes complete fiscal and logical sense. It's just working out the details, making sure that the city of Corning, the city of Tehama, the city of Red Bluff, and the county of Tehama are all happy with board representation, how things are going to be decided, because it gets a little bit sticky because the city of Corning and the city of Tehama are not owners of the landfill, whereas the county and the city of Red Bluff are joint owners, and so we need to figure out a representation that gives the city of Corning and the city of Tehama representation, but also reflects the ownership of the landfill. So that being said, once I get Jim Curtis's and Greg Einhorn's review back from them, and we discuss any edits that they feel need to be made, I'll then schedule meetings with the representatives of each city, so likely the city managers, and make sure that we can work out any details and make sure that they feel comfortable with it and they want it. And then we'll make amendments where they seem appropriate as well. So we'll go through a series of edits and commentary. So this won't be the quickest of processes, but it should be able to be complete by the beginning of this next fiscal year.
Okay, very good. Legislation, probably lots of that going on right now, isn't it?
Well, everything has to be signed soon. So there's two major bills that are of interest to JPA 1, and I'll just highlight them quickly. One is Assembly Bill 1826, solid waste or organic waste, which requires businesses that generate more than 8 cubic yards of organic waste to recycle their organic waste beginning April 1st, 2016. And then the threshold goes down from 8 cubic yards to 4 cubic yards beginning January 1, 2017. Organic waste is defined as food waste, green waste, landscape and pruning waste, non-hazardous wood waste, and food soil paper waste that is mixed in with food waste. So it could actually, it would capture the hospital, and it would capture our landscapers and some of our other entities. That being said, JPA 1 would need to consider adopting a resolution to make the county and cities within it exempt from developing an organic waste recycling program until at least January 1st, 2020. Exemptions within the law are allowed in rural counties with populations of 70,000 or less, and we run just above 63,000. Yeah, so if we grow too quickly, we will not have an exemption, and we will have to comply. We do not have a composting facility or an anaerobic digestion facility for our businesses that must comply to use. So that's the problem with this law for our businesses, creating a need for the exemption currently. If the landfill chose to fund an anaerobic digestion facility at a later date, then our businesses would then have an option. But right now, they would be in a hard place because they do not have an option that's even anywhere close to recycle their food waste. They would have to, the closest food waste composting facility, I believe, is an anaerobic digestion facility in Sacramento. And then the second bill, Senate Bill 270, the single-use grocery bag bill, has not been signed by the governor yet, but he has said that he will sign it. So we do expect him to sign it. This bill phases out single-use plastic grocery bags in supermarkets and drugstores starting July 1, 2015, and then by July 1, 2016, smaller grocery stores and convenience stores will also have to comply with the law. They'll be allowed to charge a 10-cent minimum charge for other bags, paper bags, reusable bags, or in some jurisdictions where they have composting facilities, they can sell a compostable bag for 10 cents if they choose to do so. The bill also includes standards and incentives for plastic bag manufacturers to transition to making reusable bags. Basically, there was in Southern California a few plastic bag manufacturers that were against the law because they made single-use plastic bags. And they already actually have the technology available and the infrastructure in place to make reusable bags, but they were against the law. So what they did is they created a funding mechanism for these three businesses to use if there's any other need for them to further change their business practices. So if they need to purchase more equipment, they'll have access to recycled market development zone funds for a period of time. I believe it's only for 3 years, but they will have 3 years. This bill is a little bit contentious. It's extremely supported by most of the public community. Some people hate it, some people love it. At the landfill, plastic bags are difficult for us to handle. And so they blow in the wind. They're a little bit of a nightmare to handle. And quite honestly, when you go up to the active face, that's what you see is plastic bags. So for us, we feel that it will reduce disposal quite significantly. It will take a change in mindset amongst our residents. And I was present when San Jose, the city of San Jose, passed a similar law. And I thought, oh my gosh, the city's gonna, you know, the residents are gonna be in uproar when they have a ton of groceries and they can't get a plastic bag. But really, people adjusted really quickly, and I was really surprised. Their law took effect, I wanna say, January 1, 2011. And since I have family that lived down there, I made sure to go to the grocery store that day to see what was happening. but people do adjust. It just takes a change in practice. And so I'm sure people will be a little bit upset for a time period, but they'll adjust.
I'm sure they will.
You'd be upset over 10 cents a bag for the paper bags.
I've been to Fort Bragg, so I'm used to bring my own bags.
Yeah. Yeah, and I try to tell people if they forget their bags to just put their stuff back in their trunks. And then when they get home, to grab their bags and then fill up their bags at home. Because it is a pain to have to, you know.
I'm only yelling at my wife because she loses hers constantly. Mine's back in the truck each time, so it's available. But
yeah.
We take the car to the store. Where's the bags? Oh, I don't know.
So.
Okay, waste tire event.
Okay, and so all hands will all be outreach. The general recycling coordinator items this time. Paul is our newest recycling coordinator, and they each have their own programs that they're going to be implementing. And so Paul will be the representative to all of the JPA 1 meetings, taking minutes for the meetings, and Rachel will be the representative for JPA 2. It helps with cross training.
Sure.
So expect Paul to be giving these updates in the future.
Mm-hmm. So you're giving him a bye tonight.
I'm giving him a bye tonight.
Look out next month.
So the next passenger tire collection event will be held on Saturday, October 18th from 8 a.m. to noon. That is the same date as the Dairyville Festival.
Oh, at Dairyville?
Mm. No. Oh. I'll give you the locations. It's just the same date as the Dairyville Festival. The locations will be the Los Molinos Transfer Station, the Tehama County Landfill, and Mineral Transfer Station. Due to the past events being extremely successful, CalRecycle didn't offer the grant for 1 year. In the past, the grants were offered every year, and then they stopped offering the grant, and then they decided that they would offer the grant on a 2-year cycle. So last year, because we didn't have any grants the year before, we had heavily attended events. I always budget way more tires will be received than what we actually anticipate, and we even surpass that. So in the past, we've always allowed 9 tires per trip, but you can make multiple trips because of our budget, and they have to keep to our budget. We're going to be allowing 9 tires total unless they have an exemption to haul more than 9 tires, and they need to receive that from Tehama County Environmental Health to be able to receive that exemption. We will be accepting tires off the rim. Typically, we hold 1 tire event each year where we accept tires on the rim. But usually, we also accept, you know, about 2,000 tires per event, and lately we've been accepting 5,000, 6,000 tires per event. So we won't be accepting any tires on the rim as well. If somebody has 1 tire on the rim, we'll accept it. But if somebody has a whole truckload of tires on the rim, we just can't do it. It's just too costly for the program.
Okay.
And then I also listed out the remaining tire events and the locations. There'll be an event on January 24th. We'll have our Ag Tire Month in February with the location at the landfill and potentially at Dave's shop.
Pretty sure.
Where we allow up to 6 agricultural tires, so that program won't be changed. And then we'll have a final passenger tire event as part of this grant cycle on April 11th.
Okay. And 20th Cal Recycle, 20th Cycle Cal Recycle, how do you use waste? Household?
So all of the grant-related work is part of the HD20 grant, which is how we refer to it in the office, must be complete by April 1st, 2015. And as you'll see, that we're getting close to being almost complete with all of the grant-related work. We have 4 primary objectives of the grant. And we have completed objective 1, which is to hold at least 1 temporary collection event. We held that event in Lake California. And then objective 2 is to survey local school teachers and community members about current knowledge and effective outreach mediums. By January 1, 2014, We're in progress with this survey. It should be complete by the end of November, I believe. Our contractor, the California Product Stewardship Council, is currently surveying school districts, parents, and teachers to assess the target group's household hazardous waste knowledge. So we want to know what the teachers know about household hazardous waste, and we want to know if they're teaching their students about what hazardous waste is. And then Rachel, along with CPSC, presented hazardous waste information and provided resources to teachers and administrators of Los Molinos Elementary School and Vina Elementary School on September 10th, and it was certainly well received. So they're finishing off on that project. And then the third objective is really education and outreach in a nutshell. I don't have to read you every little tidbit that we're gonna do, but all of our education and outreach campaign items have been completed except for the development of one of three editorials that we submit to the local papers for them to publish. And we're extremely fortunate in this county that when we submit items, they publish it. That doesn't happen in other communities. And so it provides a really good outreach medium for us that's free. All it takes is our cost is the time it takes to write it. And so I expect objective three to be complete by the end of calendar year. We'd also like to do some interviews with local news media to further educate the public about proper battery disposal, fluorescent light disposal, and hazardous waste disposal in Tehama County. And then the last objective four, has to do with the 4 kids bus exhibit. And that's been the most challenging part of this grant, to be quite honest. But Paul has been doing a great job developing the exhibits, and we're getting so close to being finished with all of the exhibits. All of the exhibits and all of the presentations to the schools will be done by the April 1, 2015 deadline. That shouldn't be a problem. We are currently reviewing the text for the exhibits with students because we want to make sure lingo that we use is lingo that kids would understand. And sometimes we don't realize that we use very big words that kids don't understand. Even things such as alkaline batteries. You know, there's some things you can't, there's not an alternative word for alkaline, but there's some other larger words that you can break it down into a similar fashion or easier to understand fashion for kids to understand. And so that's basically what we're ensuring, is that we're making something that's actually usable for kids, and that's important. And then we had to switch out a second battery in the bus, and it's running again. So I'm hopeful that there's no further major issues with the bus. The batteries aren't entirely too expensive, but the bus has about, 150,000 miles on it?
Maybe, yeah.
We have all the service records. It doesn't have any, we had it fully looked over. It doesn't have any major issues, so we're crossing our fingers that it can hold up. We won't be using it heavily, but we will be using it to do school presentations to the students, so I want to make sure that it's running properly. If we find that the bus just can't be relied upon, we can always transport the exhibits in our trailer and bring them to the schools and use their cafeterias. But the bus concept, the schools love that there's a field trip on wheels. When we talk about it to the public, they absolutely love the idea. So we're pursuing it.
And then next year it'll be at the fair, right?
No. It will be at the fair next year, yeah. So we expect the bus to be done this fall, and we will be doing a dry run presentation to 94th grade students at Bidwell Elementary School in October, hopefully.
Your outreach updates.
Okay. We've been doing a lot of outreach. I'm going to just give you a high-level update.
That's fine.
Unless you want more detail.
Nope, high level is fine.
There's a lot of detail in your agenda.
The signs, the trucks look good.
The trucks look good, don't they?
They really do.
Yeah, and that's part of the HD20 grant that funded that completely. So here's some of the ads. This is the Spanish language ad that I think I promised to give to you. And then this is the grant that we applied for that I'll talk about in just a second. So Rachel contributes each month to Lake California, to their newsletter, to the Rancho Tehama newsletter. And she also produces what we call our 4R e-news blast and sends it out to our listserv each month. And then she also sends out our educators a waste awareness newsletter to local teachers as well each month. We partnered with Butte County to create that Spanish language ad that is issued once a month for 6 months or 6 issues in Hispana Americana News. And this is important because the Spanish-speaking population tends to be one of the greatest self-changers. So there's the number of people that are self-changing their used motor oil and filters is declining because it doesn't cost that much to take your car into the shop anymore and get your used motor oil changed and switched out. So the number of self-changers are decreasing, but we still have enough out there that we have to promote outreach and education to through our grant. And there's always a difficult point in how do you reach those people that are actually self-changers and help them and encourage them so that they don't pour their oil down the drain or pour it in the creeks or use it as dust control on their roads. A lot of the farmers used to tell me that they love to do that.
It used to be standard practice.
Yeah, that's what you did.
So there's a lot of education in that regard, and there's a lot of farmers and ranchers that still change their own motor oil, and that's why we have the agricultural oil facility, both in Corning, at Corning Disposal, and at the landfill, that farmers can bring a drum of oil and pump it out at the landfill itself. We donated desk-side recycling bins to Bidwell Elementary School. They have a student-run recycling program there at the school. And then we applied for a competitive beverage container grant with CalRecycle for fiscal year 14-15 in the amount of $100,000 and change. And there's a phase one and phase two application process as part of this grant. And the phase one cycle does not require a resolution, but we were selected actually to be a phase two applicant, so we'll be coming to this board likely. Actually, we have a 5-year resolution for this board. I think we'll be coming to the county for a resolution for this grant. What this grant, if awarded, would fund, it would purchase and install 55 outdoor dual trash and recycling receptacles for the city of Red Bluff and all of their parks. So instead of having a trash can at the parks, it would have a dual trash and recycling receptacle where all trash cans currently reside. And then it would also provide the dual containers at the local library, so in Corning and here at the local library. And then it also will. They didn't have. They don't have an outside recycling receptacle out there.
Okay.
Yeah. And then it will also fund hands-on on-site beverage container recycling outreach and waste assessments to Tehama County businesses. So it'll help our commercial recycling program. It'll actually fund staff to go out and meet with businesses to help them recycle. And then it will help fund the development and publishing of a business-friendly commercial multifamily recycling flyer, newsletters, and e-blasts that highlight beverage container recycling and the Tehama County Smart Business Alliance program. And one of the great things about the beverage container grants is that as long as we highlight beverage container recycling, we can talk about all of our other programs, and the beverage container grant will fund it. And so it's really, really useful for this agency in implementing our programs to get these grants. We've been attending a ton of farmers markets events, and I think staff are happy that they're done and complete.
Winding down.
And we've also submitted press releases promoting our free large venue event recycling program, whereby if even for weddings or events, or it doesn't have to be a community event, it could be just somebody having a reunion party. If they give us a call, we can make sure that they have recycling bins delivered for their event, and it's completely free of charge, and it's in partnership with Green Waste. So it's been a really good program.
On that topic, the Tame Museum was happy and grateful of the little stands that you gave us for the recycling during the Jubilee.
Good. That worked out?
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Pinched my finger on a couple of them, taking them apart, but apart from that, they worked pretty well. I'm not mechanically
inclined. And then we held a successful pharmaceutical drug collection event in Los Molinos at AMPLA on July 19th, whereby 70 pounds of pharmaceutical drugs were collected. And that's actual drugs. They actually took the drugs out of the container, so that's the weight of the drugs that were collected. So it was a pretty successful event. That event was partially funded by St. Elizabeth Community Hospital that provided matching funds, and we did have a great partnership with the Sheriff's Department, the Health Services Agency, and Ample Health on that project. And I hope that we can hold another pharmaceutical drug collection event in addition to the DEA events, one or two each year, in partnership with St. Elizabeth Hospital if they continue to help fund us. And then I did pass some pictures. We applied for a farm and ranch cleanup grant for a property on Cantor Lane in Cottonwood. That grant was funded, so we'll be beginning that cleanup process. There's approximately 1,000 tires of various sizes and somewhere between 800 and 1,000 cubic yards of waste on the property.
Is that in conjunction with Sean and building department?
No, this is a separate, I do work with them on those projects. Their projects are as part of enforcement orders. They did have an enforcement order on this property as well. But it's somewhat of a sticky situation. The property owners are not present. They do not live on the property. They don't even live in the state. And so some people dumped a whole bunch of waste on the property, and being absent property owners, they had no idea what was going on their property. They had a fence, they had a gate. They went through the gate and the fence. And so it's unfortunate. The more unfortunate thing is that the cost of cleanup exceeds the property value. And so the property owners were just like, I can't afford to clean it up, the property isn't worth it. So I guess just put a lien on it. And so we were fortunate to be able to get this grant for them to be able to clean up the property. It's always a difficult situation when it's absentee property owners, because it could happen again. And so as part of that grant, whenever we apply for grants like this, I always require either some sort of fencing to prevent it. In this situation, fencing wouldn't work, but we worked with the Department of Fish and Wildlife because they had been monitoring this property and the legal disposal there. And so part of what the grant funds is cameras, and the Department of Fish and Wildlife are gonna monitor the cameras.
Very good.
And then we gave a presentation to, or actually a tour of the landfill to 76th grade students from Vista Middle School on last Friday. And it was a very successful tour of the landfill. The kids had a great time. And I think we had a fun time as well.
Did you get lots of pictures to try to help circumvent the problem with
Unfortunately, no, we don't think we got any pictures because of a large group. We each had, I had my own group that I was giving a tour of the landfill. Paul had a group that he was talking about landfill liners to, and Rachel was giving a tour of all the recycling that goes on at the facility. So I don't think we've even got one picture.
Yeah. Well, do another one and ask Lisa from the sheriff's office to come out
and take pictures.
Take pictures.
Yeah. So, or the media.
Because that kind of stuff would help with the East Gate.
For them to realize, yeah.
Right.
No, I fully recognize that. That's a separate note. I'll talk to you privately about that. It's just some of their comments are surprising.
Oh, I know. Apparently, it was discussed again last night at the Tea Party meeting.
Tea Party, yeah. Sandy was there. I prepped her for it. I hope it went well for her.
She said it went pretty well. I talked to her today.
And then Paul attended the Community Action Agency's mini resource fair and tailgate food giveaway and conducted public education and outreach there. And then Rachel attended the Community Food Alliance meeting on August 11th to share information regarding successful food waste reduction programs in other jurisdictions. We submitted our annual report as part of our used oil payment program grant. And as part of that report, we have to visit all of our certified collection centers. So Paul went around and made sure all of our collection centers are in compliance and know how to properly dispose of contaminated oil and how the requirements of the program and so forth. We will be sharing a booth with the Tehama County Library at the fair this year. to help with staffing of the booth. And so we're excited to partner with the library because we try to reach out to the young children as well. And the library obviously attracts young children. And then we were also fortunate to get other department heads to help volunteer their time. And then my staff will be there a considerable amount of time as well. And then we also get student volunteers from Red Bluff High School and from Mercy to volunteer at our booth. And I like to get the students there because one, they relate to the young kids better than we do because they're just closer in age. And then also, I just feel like it's killing two birds with one stone per se. We educate the high schoolers and then they educate somebody else and we get more involvement throughout the program. And then we have upcoming events, our hazardous waste event. Coming up is on September 20th at the landfill and on October 18th at Corning Disposal. And then our e-waste events continue the last Saturday of every month. And in July, we collected 11,080 pounds of e-waste at both locations. And in August, we collected 7,600 pounds of e-waste. And we included some of the examples of the outreach items in your agenda packet.
Very good.
And I think there's one last item.
One last item, Smart Business Alliance.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So this is our quarterly update of Smart Business Alliance activities. The Smart Business Alliance is basically our voluntary program to comply with AB 341, which is the mandatory commercial recycling law, which requires businesses that produce more than four or more cubic yards of waste per week to recycle. And so what we do is we provide incentives, we provide free assistance, we try to walk them through, we have a checklist, and we give them free advertising if they take part in the program. And so we really try to encourage them and give them some positive outcomes by trying recycling with us. And they can also get three months of recycling service through Green Waste if they utilize our program. And what we do during those 3 months is we right-size their waste and recycling needs. And that helps us reduce their costs, helps them get accustomed to the program, and at which time they keep the same waste container sizes that they had before they started recycling, and then we add recycling to it, and we monitor it both, and so by the end of it, we know exactly how much recycling they're producing and how much waste that they're producing, so we can right-size their containers for them. And I would say 95% of the time, we're able to save the businesses money, and they really appreciate the program. And so Rachel's working with the Comfort Inn right now. That's our newest member. And as part of that, every single room in the hotel is getting these little, I call them table tents, but these little displays to tell
why to recycle.
What is recyclable and what they can put in their recycle bins. And so every room at the hotel has a recycling bin now as part of their recycling program. And then there's a typo here. We did not lose the sale house as a partner. We lost the PATH thrift store as a partner because the thrift store closed. But we currently have 15 partners in the program, and the program is expanding quickly. And one of the goals of this year is to increase program participation and outreach to 10 more businesses. And the more outreach that happens, the more other businesses are willing to participate because they know that their friend over here is already participating. And so it makes program growth a lot easier. And so it's Rachel's program, so Rachel will continue to work on it, and she's doing a great job doing outreach for the program and monitoring the businesses and helping them out. The businesses that participate in the program, we advertise using grant funds that we have in local papers for them quarterly to give them recognition. And so basically they get listed out, and we put their logos for their business on an ad for them, both in the local papers and in the Chamber of Commerce newsletter. And we also give the businesses recycling containers. We give them so much free assistance. We help them out in any way we possibly can.
Well, as soon as I get moved on Main Street, I'll call you.
Oh.
We're moving the embroidery shop.
You are?
I just bought you and Jordan's building on Main Street.
Uh-huh.
The old floor shop.
Uh-huh.
So
doing
some remodeling, and hopefully by the 1st of November we'll have the embroidery moved.
Wow.
I hope.
That's exciting.
I don't want to pay rent and payments.
No.
So. Alrighty. Anything else before the illustrious board tonight?
Nope. So the next meeting is not till November, because this board meets every other month.
And I think tonight is the third Wednesday?
Yes.
That's the same night as Farm Bureau.
Oh.
Okay, so we need to...
Next year, look at adjusting
schedule. Next year, look at it a little bit.
If we don't do a consolidation.
Right. Yeah. Well, I would hope that we would do a consolidation.
Yeah, if we did the consolidation, it likely wouldn't take effect till July 1, 2015 for auditing purposes, just to make a clear cut. But we could definitely look at the schedule beginning January 1, 2015.
Yeah. I think we need to consolidate, really.
It's sounds good.
Yeah.
If we have that much duplication, it would be a good...
Yeah, save money and save time and, you know, whatever we got to do, we'll wait till the attorneys get back to you with some notes to you, and we'll go from there. But I think that sounds like a plan.
Mm-hmm. I do too. It's something that has been talked about since I started with the agency in 2006. So it's not a new concept. It's just with the new contract and the funding mechanisms and closing a phase one, and the new agency office, it just makes sense for a lot of different reasons. And there's a lot of confusion by the public. There's confusion about what our agency does to begin with, but what each agency does and why each agency exists is very confusing.
And then if and when we get the new office out there and the meeting room, will we move all our meetings to that facility out there?
That would be proposed.
With consolidation, that should work. All right, be adjourned.
Thank you.